And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
Well, Dave, I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
We did, thanks, and hope you did as well.
Well, it's kind of a funny thing now. Thanksgiving was Thursday, and then a new holiday, Indigenous Peoples Day, Friday. So what I recall going to school when I was a kid, before Thanksgiving, we were all prepped for it, and we drew pictures, and we saw read books and looked at pictures about the Indians bringing nice food to the pilgrims because the pilgrims were having a difficult winter, and Indians were going to bail them out and bring them food, and they had this wonderful feast, and everybody got along smackingly well. And lo and behold, generation later, it turned out that was all false. None of that happened. Didn't work that way at all.
So I'm just wondering,
I wonder what people do now. I wonder what the kids are learning now.
Well, yeah. That's a question. Of course, the Republicans are trying to limit in many places what they're learning in different schools about all sorts of things that don't fit into the, white man's agenda.
Well, so the reason I thought of this was that I noticed that a couple of the courts in their recent rulings have shown that the influence of Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump in terms of literacy, they've really had a great effect on American literacy. It turns out that lawyers and judges in the 200 some odd year history of the United States really couldn't read, couldn't understand what they were looking at, couldn't understand the laws. It took Trump and Betsy DeVos to appoint judges and promote educational opportunities that straightened things out. And they were able to discover that laws that judges thought meant one thing in reality meant something else altogether. And nobody had ever realized that before. Just like with Thanksgiving.
Well, let's not leave out Leonard Leo.
Well, okay, right, yes.
I mean, and the money behind him. The old saying was that the victors get to write the history. But what happened with the Republican Party after the losses in the mid-1960s with Goldwater is they didn't take the loss sitting down. They decided to retrench, and part of that was ultimately became rewriting of history, and mostly after 1980 when Reagan was able to get elected and change the whole tenor of the federal government.
And they've done it. They've been successful, and they've shifted the center of weight of the government really into the courts.
Yeah,
right. With gerrymandering, they've managed to stymie the legislative functions, and to the courts. So are where politics are fought out at this point, right?
Yeah, and that's where Leonard Leo comes in. Of course, it's only fought in the courts when they win. When they lose, then that's a different matter, and that's what's kind of new. Under the Trump theory of government is heads we win, tails you always lose, and even when you win, you lose. That's the whole ideal that they have.
Of course, Clarence Thomas has been doing this, advocating this for years, right? I mean, he came up with all these. President doesn't count. In fact, you have to go back and see not only what did the lawmakers intend, you really have to pay attention to what did the public at the time that the bill was passed understand the words to be, and also what were the laws at the time? If there were no laws at the time similar to the laws that are passed now, the law that's passed now, according to Clarence Thomas, is unconstitutional. And the majority of the court agrees with that.
Yeah, well, you know, Clarence Thomas is someone who, in that group that thinks that they can, it's called originalism, and it didn't originate with Thomas, it originated with Robert Bork and then Scalia. Who wants to go back and fathom out exactly what the words meant back in colonial times? But don't forget, he's a guy who has a problem reading what the plain English is in modern times when it comes to having to report things on his form, the form that all judges, all federal officials have to fill out.
He read it. He just read it differently.
You know, the other thing about, going back is, and I pointed this out in a lecture I gave to the Bar Association a year or two ago, was the fact that all of these laws were made by white men who were voted on only by white men, most white Christian men.
Christian men who were property owners. Not only any property, but property owners above a certain level. It was rich property owners, rich for that period.
Yeah, and of course, there's no, if I use the word evolution of language or of understanding of things over the centuries with these folks. Of course, that only applies when it works in their favor. When it doesn't work in their favor, then they come up with different things and different ideas.
That's right. They come up with different things and different ideas. They change everything around, or they come up with a different history. Yeah. You may think that Washington crossed the Delaware, but I know for sure that he was actually eating ribs on the other side and never crossed the Delaware.
Yeah, or what have you. Like we said, they did this with guns, where for 200 years everybody thought that the first part of the Second Amendment about a well-regulated militia was the essential part. And then Scalia comes along and says, no, it has virtually no meaning there. It's individuals' rights. Under more modern laws, this last week we had a ruling out of the Eighth Circuit, and again, this goes to who gets to appoint the judges. And
That's why I'm talking about this right now, because it seems to me that this what we're talking about shows that there's a shift in the significance of democracy. If the battle is being fought in the courts, then who chooses the judges is key.
Yes. Yes. And we know that Trump, that was one of the things he ran on, that he was going to appoint Federalist Society judges. And, of course, he shifted the entire Supreme Court. He appointed in 4 years one-third of the Supreme Court. He had as many appointments to the court, I believe, as Clinton and Obama put together.
Well, to be fair, Mitch McConnell helped.
Yes, Mitch McConnell helped. Mitch McConnell helped. But that was part of the strategy. keep seats open for us, and then when there's another opening that we can squeeze through, we will do that. That was to the fault of the Democrats, who in many ways neglected the federal courts. They were content to win the presidency and not realizing that the presidency has some meaning in terms of the courts. Biden is trying to correct that. I mean, he's put through more federal judges in his first 3 years than anybody has. But the Supreme Court remains solidly 6-3 conservative. And the question is, will he get any other or will another Democratic president get another appointee?
Why do you suppose Tuberville? Why do you think he hasn't turned his attention to the judges? Why does he just pay attention to the army?
I think
maybe he just doesn't realize the significance of the judges. They say he's the stupidest man in Congress.
Yeah, he bit off more than he can chew. And don't forget, I think that you know, with McConnell, they've really done away with the 60 votes to stop that you need to appoint a judge. They when McConnell became so recalcitrant, the Democrats said, well, for all the judges on the lower courts, not the Supreme Court, we're not going to let you block every judge. We're going to just go by sheer majority. Mm-hmm. They changed that rule, and then McConnell changed that rule for the Supreme Court as well in order to get Amy Coney Barrett passed through. Well, he got Kavanaugh and Gorsuch as well. But in any event, I was going to say that, you know, the Eighth Circuit, previously the Supreme Court under Roberts, who worked hard when he was in the federal Justice Department to stymie minority voting, he declared part of the Voting Rights Act no longer applicable. I think it was Article 5. He said it really wasn't needed, that we didn't have to have these strict measures because the discrimination had gone away. And of course, immediately all these red states began passing discriminatory laws, making it harder to vote. But one part of the act remained, and that was private actions that people could bring, saying that they had been harmed under this. And since 1965, all the courts had read that law pretty standardly one way. And all of a sudden now the Eighth Circuit has decided with conservative judges that didn't apply either.
See, they learned to read.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting because another part of the Roberts opinion was that we didn't need the provisions of Article 5 because people could bring private causes of action. And, you know, now, of course, the Eighth Circuit says, no, we can't do that either, which is, you know, begging for review, and we'll see what happens on that.
And, of course, these fellows are shameless, right? I mean, it doesn't.
It's all results-oriented.
Yeah.
It's all results-oriented. Now, on the other hand, in Pennsylvania, we had a judge. This thing sort of got stayed, you know, because it didn't matter. It became moot in the 2020 election, was whether or not you count votes where Pennsylvania law requires they to be, when they're sent back, the date be written on the back of the envelope. And if it isn't written, whether you count those votes.
Why was that put into the law? Do you know?
I don't know. That was a law for a long time. Uh-huh. Probably because people, you know, thought, oh, you know, what difference does it make? You're going to sign it, you're going to date it.
Yeah.
And a federal judge in Pennsylvania decided this week that part of the law was really in contradiction to the Civil Rights Act of 64, which said that small things, small matters should not be able to override the greater import. And they said, look, if these votes are received by election day and the date isn't on them, it doesn't make a difference.
Right. You know, well, obviously they were mailed before election day.
Yeah. They were cast in time. Of course, you know, the big difference between 64 and now is that we have a tremendous amount of voting goes on before election day. Back then, it was mostly on election day with, you know, some absentee ballots. But now, most of the states, it's called election season. It starts in some places in September. and runs through October before the election. I like to vote in person, but I know that I've seen the drop off in our election when we go in to vote. My wife and I go in to vote, and there's hardly anybody there at the polls voting instead of the longer lines. And then you ask the people who are running the election there, and they say, "Oh, we've got 150 votes that we have to count. You know, mm-hmm. that came in by mail ballot."
Mm-hmm.
So we have that, but that case is going to go up I don't know if it gets to the Supreme Court what the judges are going to say. If it's a decision under Pennsylvania state law, the state Supreme Court should have that final say, on that.
But the real dangers that the courts seizing power from the legislature, the real current danger is that the Supreme Court will decide that all of the agencies of the federal government are unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's...
And that'll be the end. They've been after the New Deal, and that is the New Deal. They've right. been after the New Deal since the New Deal was established in the 1930s. That would end it.
Right. George Will wrote a column about that this week. And, of course, he's in favor of ending the New Deal.
Right.
But one of the administrative agencies has, they have hearings or trials that are non-jury. They're administrative trials. And that case is up with the courts. Of course, that could really play havoc because there are a lot of agencies that have administrative trials, particularly Social Security on disability cases. The argument is that only Article III judges, which means the Supreme Court, the courts of appeal, the U.S. district courts, are essentially and the ones that Congress has established specifically, like courts of claims, those courts can hear cases, and nothing that the administrative agencies can. But I mean, if you can imagine, I do Social Security disability cases, and you can imagine every disability client having to try to get a jury trial.
I can't imagine. Explain what would happen.
Well, the courts wouldn't have time for anything else. Number one. Number two, the cost.
Well, you could expand the number of judges by however many you'd have to expand them, right?
You would, which means.
So you need new buildings. You need more buildings.
Or Congress would have to, actually establish a court of Social Security claims, I guess. That would be the easier way, but then you still have to appoint all these judges. They have to get approved by the Senate, which they're not now. But the unwieldiness, most of these folks are really, up against it when they apply. They haven't worked in a long time. They're hurting, and the cost of a jury trial becomes prohibitive because the amount that you could win is limited by how long you've been disabled and what your earnings are. I just got a notice from the federal courts that just to file a case in federal court now is up to $425.
Just to put in the papers.
Yeah, just to. You have it done. Now there's a process that you could file in form of papyrus. But again, that takes time. And, lawyers aren't going to be wanting, right now it's a tough thing. Most lawyers are saying, look, I have to put in so much more effort to get not much more out of it, and who knows how long the backlog is going to be. Right now there's a backlog with administrative judges. Who knows how long the backlog would be when you have to have jury trials. Put people through it.
Well, you can see some glimmer of what it might be by looking at the immigration courts. What is the, there's a 10-year backlog, isn't there?
Yeah. Something like that, which is also...
So is that what the Republicans are aiming at?
Anything that bollocks up the federal government. Yeah.
So supposing they succeed, so they do it. What's the benefit to them? What's the benefit to anybody?
Well, they say our people aren't affected by it, you know? And what they really want is, like, the cases that are up there, that the businesses won't, there won't be things that shackle businesses from exploiting whatever.
Okay, all right, I can see that. But, well, I guess, right, all of these, many of the administrative hearings deal with regulation, right?
Right.
So that would all go by the board. That would disappear. Well, okay, so I understand it. So the average worker will have trouble getting any kind of justice because of the long lines and the costs involved and the bureaucracy involved. And the companies will be delighted because they won't be attacked.
They challenge.
They won't be attacked.
There's no challenges. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Heads they win, the tails we lose.
Type of stuff. But that's what they're after.
Right.
Well, what do you think? Will it happen?
I think because of the practicalities of it, that they're going to try to find a way to limit it in some way. They're going to try to benefit the that doesn't totally bollocks bollocks everything up. But we won't know until we hear the arguments. We won't know until we hear the arguments. So we'll just have to see. We'll have to see.
But the breakdown on the court is Roberts would undoubtedly be in favor of doing this, even if he would want to do it in a more incremental way.
Yeah.
But this is what he wants to do.
Yeah. He and Kavanaugh would be in that category.
Gorsuch wants to do it, period. Get it done.
Oh, yeah. Gorsuch and Alito and probably Barrett.
Well, and of course, Thomas.
They'll go whole hog. Yeah, Thomas. They'll go whole hog.
Yeah.
They'll go whole hog on this. So we'll have to see. There was an argument a couple of weeks ago that I was kind of surprising as to what it just escapes me that I heard the audio on that people were kind of worried about but didn't there's going to be something like that worked out on one of these issues. But meanwhile, I don't want to forget about what happened in Colorado this week. There's that 14th Amendment case, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which says no official who's been involved in insurrection can hold office. The judge hearing the case came to, I guess it's, it would be a, I don't know if it's a Solomon-like decision, but he said, yeah, Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, but the law doesn't apply to the president, or the office of the presidency, which was an interesting conclusion.
And the reason it doesn't apply to the office of the presidency is because the wording of the oath is different.
Slightly different. Slightly different, but the wording of the amendment says, it talks about, it doesn't specify the president. It talks about other officers. Well, it talks about Congress and then it talks about officers. But if the president or the vice president aren't officers of the federal government, then who is?
Then who is, exactly.
And then the question is, when the Colorado Supreme Court takes it up, the law usually states this, that findings of fact by a lower court cannot be overturned absent egregious error in those facts.
So the finding of fact here is that Trump committed insurrection.
Right. So that is presumptively what the court has to adopt, the appellate court. And they only have to look at the interpretation of law, which is within the appellate courts. Now,
in other words, does the law, is the president an officer of the United States?
Yeah, right. Now, there are instances, and of course, this has never been really litigated before, where the appellate court can say, no, in a case like this, we have de novo powers to revisit the fact. In other words, we can look at them again. We don't have to adopt the lower court's finding of fact.
Can that be done?
Yes, that can be done. We just don't know if they're going to want to do it.
Has that been done commonly?
It has been done in certain cases. I mean, I've you know, I've litigated cases where on appeal you say this is a de novo. They have to make a de novo finding. But it's not the general way of doing things. So we'll just have to see.
Well, what conditions? In other words, in what circumstances does the court say, okay, we're going to look at the facts and decide for ourselves?
It's just the nature of the of the underlying issue as to what it is. I can't give you a really good
example. Well, I can see that this would a case. This would be something where an Alito or a Thomas would really go to town.
Yeah, I think that they. Yeah, they would, or they just do what they normally do and is ignore the facts.
The
fact that they found
you brought us this case, but we're going to decide the other case.
Yeah, right. And they've done this many times before. Yeah. They've done that many times before.
So, in other words, the judges are not bound by any rules, really. The procedure that you're used to could be struck down at any. In any trial, in any case, that they decide to do it. So you would imagine that the more important the case, the more they would do it. This group, anyway.
Right, right. Don't forget, in Citizens United, they chose to decide a totally different case than what was brought to them.
Precisely. That's what I was thinking about. Right, right.
You know, it was a very narrow issue on free speech, whether you could prohibit ads within the last 2 weeks of a contest, and they decided the whole thing whether you could limit spending.
Yeah.
Now we've seen the results of that. We've seen the results.
So people who say, "Well, the courts are that's our pillar of defense," they're kidding themselves. Politics is your pillar of defense. If you want to have courts that defend the Constitution, you got to pay attention to politics.
You got to win.
You got to win, which means you got to organize.
Yeah.
You got to explain it to your neighbors.
Yeah. Meanwhile, talk about wins. We got to talk about a big loser this week, and that was your pal George Santos.
My pal.
You know, right. When you read what the Ethics Committee came out with. Actually, it was before Congress split for the week. I mean, it was one of the most scathing reports that anybody could have about saying he broke law after law after law. It's just amazing. And whether or not he survived the last motion to remove him, whether or not he can survive this, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what the Speaker of the House, whether he can marshal his forces or not, or whether he's going to decide, the man of great morals, is whether he's going to decide that this is even too much for him and, just jettison Santos and go with one less vote.
Three votes, very perilous.
It's very perilous. It's very perilous.
Me just tell you something quickly about what happened in my county last week, which was great. A local clone of Moms for Liberty, Book Banners, decided to try to overthrow and replace the library board in our county. They worked at it for months. The voting was this week. The library board was not overthrown. They were defended 2-1 against the Book Banners. I think that's great. Something unexpected in a rural county. These right-wingers can be beaten. All you got to do is work at it.
And what we've seen is they've gone too far, and people are waking up to that. Of course, we know the Moms for Liberty chapter down around Philadelphia. It turns out that one of their leaders is a convicted or admitted sex offender.
No, he's convicted. He's on the index. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, liberty for some, but not for kids.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
We'll see what the next week brings. I believe Congress is going back in session.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but we'll see what happens.
The courts will always be in session.
They'll always be in session, and we got to be careful because these are not out-of-the-way jobs. These are front and center in the political struggle of today.
Yep.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.